thank Michael Kelly and Evan Sisson from the Virginia Commonwealth University and authors of our commentary this month entitled Potential Uses of Niacin, Flushing Out the Results of the HPS2 Thrive Study, for joining us today for a brief podcast. For those who haven't read the trial, can you give us a brief summary of what this trial was all about?
So the HPS2 Thrive trial was trying to answer a unique question, which is, does raising HDL make a difference in lowering residual risk in patients already at their LDL goal?
And what was the intervention that was used in this particular trial and the outcomes?
So HPS2 study looked at adding niacin in combination with lorcaprevir to patients on statin therapy. The lorcaprevir was added to mitigate that flushing adverse effects and try to improve adherence. All the patients had a pre-existing history of some sort of cardiovascular disease. After about 4 years, there was really no difference in the primary outcome of major vascular events in patients who received niacin versus placebo. However, there was increased adverse events such as worsening diabetes, new onset diabetes, gastrointestinal effects, gout, and bleeding and infection.
Now, the results of the HPS2 Thrive study were a bit surprising. They're kind of negative in that more patients who were randomized to niacin plus lorcaprevir experienced significant adverse effects. Do you think these adverse effects were largely due to niacin or to lorcaprevir or both? Or is this just a statistical anomaly?
So I think the kind of well-known niacin effects, certainly the GI, the myopathy, gout, those things are kind of well-characterized. So I think those adverse effects are primarily due to niacin. Niacin does have this kind of effect on raising glucose. Whether that contributed to more increased risk of diabetes, I think is cautionary in that patients were also receiving statins. The bleeding and infection, those were kind of surprising. Those are kind of what we're wondering ourselves, if whether the lorcaprevir had something to do possibly with the increased incidence in those adverse effects.
I think that the adverse events that occurred in the trial were largely known with niacin. The difficulty with the trial design is being able to tease out which adverse effects were directly related to niacin and which were related to the prostaglandin D2 inhibitor. The increased risk of diabetes in the trial may have been due to the large population of Chinese patients that were included. I know that for patients with an elevated blood glucose, the practice style is often to hospitalize those patients and optimize their glucose level. So it's difficult to determine whether the increased risk of diabetes in the patients of Chinese descent was related to some ethnic variant in their response to niacin or the prostaglandin D2 inhibitor, or if it was just a cultural norm of their healthcare system that when the glucose was elevated, that then they were hospitalized.
Now, some might argue that based on the HPS2 Thrive study and AIM-HI as well, that niacin really shouldn't be used any longer. Are there patient populations you think might benefit from niacin therapy and you'd still consider recommending it?
So we feel that niacin could be used in patients who are unable to tolerate that high-intensity statin that would be recommended through the ACC-AHA guidelines or don't have the LDL reduction that's expected. Patients who have well-controlled lipid parameters probably are unlikely to benefit from the addition of niacin, but we feel that patients who still remain at risk due to elevated atherogenic cholesterol, and a low HDL or high triglycerides, and elevated LDL, non-HDL above 100 may kind of be the cut point for adding niacin.
I think a unique aspect of this trial that is difficult to evaluate is the fact that half the patients were from China, half were from Europe. And when you look at those subgroups, while the patients from China did not benefit from adding niacin, the patients from Europe did have a statistically significant reduction in their coronary events. So I think in this case, for patients of European descent, looking at non-HDL is more valuable. Trying to evaluate the risk that's imparted by small dense LDL and the other components that put patients at risk for cardiovascular disease, such as smoking, obesity.
And I would just add that additional subgroup analysis did show that there seemed to be a benefit in patients with an elevated LDL. Those who had a LDL of greater than 77, higher ApoB concentrations and low HDL.
Now, the results of HBS2 Thrive and Aim High suggest that using drugs that increase HDL cholesterol and lower triglycerides don't really improve outcomes. What are your thoughts about targeting lipid parameters, the NSEP3 approach to lipid management, versus the use of targeted statin doses, which are the more recent recommendation from the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association?
Well, I think it depends on your perspective. In the United States, 600,000 people a year die of heart disease. We know that statins are effective. However, at 6 months, only half the people that start on a statin are still taking them. So I think that the ACC/AHA guidelines looked at those data, and it really swayed their decision-making as to the approach. Really, they approached it from the standpoint of, if we can just get patients on statins, we can knock the 600,000 number down significantly. And that's a true statement. However, what we find in clinic with individual patients are multiple exceptions to the rule.
It's about individualizing the patient care. People who have well-controlled LDL, probably unlikely to benefit from addition. However, looking at the atherogenic cholesterol, low HDL, elevated triglycerides, in addition to LDL, those are kind of the factors you take into account, including the high sensitivity CRP.
For patients that are at their LDL goal, then they're probably not going to benefit from adding niacin. However, in those patients with an elevated non-HDL or who have other risk factors of cardiovascular disease, adding niacin or combination therapy makes a lot of sense. And the reality is that most of the patients that we see in the U.S., at least in our clinics, are not at their LDL goal. And so we're constantly looking to combination therapy to see how much lower can we bring them, lower the non-HDL, in order to lower their overall cardiovascular risk.
Well, I want to thank our guests, Evan Sisson and Michael Kelly from Virginia Commonwealth University, for sharing their thoughts with us about the HBS2 Thrive study and the recent changes in the clinical practice guidelines for the management of lipid disorders. I think it's clear from their comments that they believe targeting lipid parameters is still an important approach to lipid management, and that the results of HBS2 Thrive should be taken with a grain of salt, particularly given the large number of patients that were enrolled from China. So until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iForumRx.org.